I am speaking with Western Michigan University philosophy professor Fritz Ahlhoff. He is the author of Terrorism, Ticking Time Bombs, and Torture. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
You call this a philosophical analysis. Now, you're a philosophy professor, but what does it mean that this book is a philosophical analysis? Is that different from, say, a policy analysis?
Sure. So I think there's a lot of different ways that you could approach the torture debate. And some of them, you could look at it historically. You could look at it from a political science perspective. You could look at sociology. You could look at it as an intelligence matter. And my training is in philosophy, so I really try to approach the question philosophically whether interrogational torture could ever be justified. And there's a lot of important work that's already been done from a lot of these other disciplines, but there hadn't been a conservative treatment of torture from a philosophical standpoint. So that was the point of my project.
And you find that in some cases, yes, interrogational torture should be allowed. Can you maybe give us some ideas of when?
Right. So the thesis of the book is that insofar as torture could, in extreme cases, be the lesser of two evils, it would be justified. And it's a carefully circumscribed position in which I hold that when torture could or would be justified, it's going to be in exceedingly rare cases. And it's going to be in cases when the only way to get life-saving information would be through torture, when other alternatives have been exhausted, when there are time constraints, when the costs of not getting the information would be very high, and so forth.
Now, you make an argument that torture almost certainly must work some of the time. You also acknowledge it probably does not work all of the time. Don't we have to try to pin down a percentage here if we're going to move forward? I mean, there's a big difference if torture is working 10% of the time or 50% of the time, right?
Right, absolutely. So from a utilitarian perspective, the percentages are important insofar as they are going to tell us more about the relevant costs and benefits. But even if torture doesn't work all the time, say it only does work 10% of the time, if you have a 10% chance of saving thousands of lives, your expected outcome would still be to save, say, a few hundred lives. So even if the torture only works, say, 1 out of 10 times, but in so doing you save 1,000 lives, it could still come out justified, I think.
If you were proposing rules for, say, the CIA to use under torture, what sort of guidelines would you want in place that say, yes, we can torture, but here are the ways that we're going to do it, and here are the circumstances under which it would be allowed?
Right. So I think it gets a lot harder, and I try this in the third part of the book, but it gets a lot harder when you turn from the philosophical part to the operational or to the legal part. And my general thinking is that torture should stay illegal, and people who torture should be prosecuted because torture is against the law, but they should be able to avail themselves of the necessity defense. So that's a well-established principle in criminal law under which you can do things that are illegal. Nevertheless, you can plead justification, saying, for example, that it was the lesser of two evils, and if you can tell that story compellingly to a court, you would be acquitted. So torturers would still be liable to criminal sanctions. Nevertheless, they could be the circumstances could be exculpatory.
Should there also be some sort of training in there? I assume that you would not want to see someone who was tortured killed, for instance, because someone was overzealous, didn't know what they were doing, or permanently injured, organ failure, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so it's you know, an important part of the theory would be that there should never be any more torture than is absolutely necessary to save the lives. You know, I'm a big fan. I think there should be training. I think there should be oversight. I think there should be the torture should be authorized through various levels of our command and control operations. Sure. So I think there's a lot of safeguards that are really critical that you'd want to build in.
But you do say that you're not necessarily a fan of the idea of torture warrants, which is something that Alan Dershowitz has proposed. What would be the problem with those?
Well, I think there are a few problems, but the basic problem with torture warrants, I think, is that it takes the responsibility off of the intelligence community and it transfers it to the courts. So with torture warrants, I think what you would see is the intelligence community would not be very judicious in requesting these things because ultimately they wouldn't be responsible. It would be the courts. And because the courts would have authorized the torture in advance, I think the incentives for the intelligence community to be conservative are undermined. So I would rather have the differences between whether the torture is authorized in advance through a torture warrant or authorized after the fact through the necessity defense. And I would rather have the torturer stay liable to criminal sanctions but be able to be exonerated.
Something you address in your book, but I'm sure people will also raise a question about, is the idea of the slippery slope. Could we reach a point where we justify torturing one person and perhaps doing great harm because we might save two lives in some sort of a ticking time bomb scenario, as you spell it out?
Right, absolutely. And I think it's important to emphasize that when I say the costs have to outweigh the benefits, there's a lot of costs, and the costs aren't just the pain inflicted upon the person being tortured. That's a very real and very substantial cost. But there are a lot of other important costs in terms of the structure of our society, our desensitization toward violence.
You also say it could exacerbate the problem of terrorism.
It could exacerbate terrorism, right. I mean, it could be the case that some militant terrorist, knowing that their colleagues have been tortured, could be steeled for further terrorism. So, sure, all of that has to go into the calculus, and that's absolutely critical. And to be sure, that definitely undermines the case for torture. The question is whether it annihilates that case or whether we could still, in certain idealized or extreme circumstances, have it be the case that once we tell the full story, accounting for all the costs, the ledger could still come up positive.
Now, as you say in your book, the terrorist attacks in September of 2001 brought a whole new focus to the issue of torture. But you also say in Chapter 9 of your book, which is called The Limits of Torture, that probably some sort of enhanced interrogation would not have been able to stop those attacks in September of 2001. Is that part of the limit there, that even if you have enhanced interrogation or torture, you may not be able to stop the worst of the worst terrorist attacks?
Sure, and for a lot of reasons. I mean, it might be the case that certain terrorists just aren't susceptible to torture on the sort of time scale in which it would need to be affected. But there are a lot of other limits on torture too. It's just not always the case that we're going to have somebody in custody who has the time sensitive information that we would need. So some of the preconditions that you would need for justified torture, even in my view, just wouldn't always attain.
The capture and killing of Osama bin Laden now almost 2 years ago also brought some new attention to the issue of torture, because some people believed that enhanced interrogation led to the information that gave his whereabouts. There's a lot of dispute about that. Let's just, for the sake of argument, say that that's true, that it was some sort of torture that got the intelligence information the U.S. needed to find Osama bin Laden. Does that qualify as a ticking time bomb scenario, absent some information that he was ready to hatch a plot?
I'm not sure that it does, and I think you hit it. You got it just right. It's the operational control that bin Laden would have had over al-Qaeda just before his death was likely so eviscerated that it's just not obvious that killing him would have stopped any future attacks. It's also quite possible, as you suggested earlier, that turning him into a martyr could create even more attacks. So at least in the bin Laden context, that to me is not an obvious case of justified torture. We'd need to know more, which we don't, sort of what operational stature he had at that stage of his career and whether he was still presiding over military operations or not. And I just can't imagine that he would have been. I mean, he was so isolated at that stage. He had to hide. So I'm just not sure that he would have been in a position to affect the sort of mass casualties that would have been important for me in terms of thinking that torture would have been justified.
You do acknowledge in your book that it is possible that if you had some sort of a torture program, that innocent people may be among those who end up being tortured in an attempt to get information. And you say that despite that, you still would favor some sort of a program that allows for torture in some cases. How do you reconcile the idea that somebody innocent might be tortured?
Right. So torture of innocence is really, really, really bad. There's no question about that. The question is just whether the benefits could still cover those costs, even as those costs get high enough. So for my thinking, if we end up torturing an innocent, that's again, very bad, but there could be, at least in principle, countervailing benefits that cover them.
Would you say that your position on torture may be akin to what some people have argued over the years about dropping nuclear weapons on Japan to end World War II? Yes, many innocent people died as a result of that, and that was unfortunate, but that the United States and President Harry Truman at the time had to make a decision about what was going to be the least objectionable outcome and decided upon this.
Right. So I think that most people working in just war theory think the atomic bombs over Japan were just were not necessary. They were gratuitous violence and death, that Japan would have surrendered soon anyway, that even if that isn't true, there's ways we could have effectuated the surrender short of nuclear weapons and so forth. So I think a lot of people are going to think those bombs were not justified. But the analogy is actually illustrative, because there's ways in which, at least in war, we can look at civilian casualties as collateral damage, and all just war theorists are going to acknowledge that at least some amount of collateral damage is allowed under just war thinking. So similarly with torture, yes, we might end up torturing some innocent people, and that's really bad, and we should for sure try to minimize that. Nevertheless, just as some civilians might legitimately be killed in war, so I think it might be the case that if some innocents were tortured, that could be covered given the benefits.
One of the things you say about torture is that it does not address the root causes of terrorism. In that way, is torturing, perhaps if it happens, a bit of a failure, that things reached this point where torture would be necessary under your guidelines to try and prevent some sort of a terrorist attack?
Absolutely. And I think the torture comes way too late. It's the issue is, you know, even in the most compelling case for torture, it comes when we have a terrorist in custody, we have a bomb getting ready to go off, we have a lot of people prospectively who are going to die. But that story doesn't even begin to answer deeper questions to, well, why did this happen in the first place? Why do we have terrorists? Why do we have terrorists planting bombs? And so forth and so on. So there's a lot of course, I wish there wasn't torture. I wish there didn't ever need to be torture. But to move toward a world in which we don't have terrorism, there's a lot of stuff that we'd have to figure out first, having to do with religious extremism, having to do with poverty, having to do with the place of American culture in the world, and so forth and so on. So torture certainly isn't going to fix everything, and there's a lot of important work that needs to be done to forestall the root causes of terrorism, and that's an important project. The issue still, though, has to do with, if we find ourselves in an emergency situation where a bomb's getting ready to go off somewhere and we don't know where it is, then what are we supposed to do about it? And in that situation, it doesn't do much good to say, well, we need to stamp out terrorism around the world, which, while true, isn't useful at that juncture.
Do you want to write more about this? I know you worked on this book for a long time, and you've definitely invested a lot in terms of research and those sort of things. This is a 200-page book or so. Do you have more to say on the subject?
I don't, and that's the great thing about writing a book, is you get to have the last word, and you know, there's reviews going on right now, and maybe there'll be some responses to those. But I was working on this project for about 10 years, and I think the book represents the culmination of my thinking about it, and I'm going to turn to some other things now.
Fritz Alhoff, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.